Welcome to the Ortho Eval Pal podcast, where we can help you build confidence with your orthopedic evaluation and management skills. We hope you enjoy the show. And now, for your host, Paul Marquis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 336 of the Ortho Eval Pal podcast. I'm your host, Paul Marquis, PT, and today we're going to be talking about treating various causes of metatarsalgia. This is our two-part series. If you missed last week's episode, you probably should jump in on that one and take a peek at that. That's going to be in the show notes here. Today we're going to be talking about the importance of proper shoe wear, what type of stretching is most beneficial. We'll cover modalities for metatarsalgia, and we are also going to talk about when orthotics are indicated, what types to use, and so much more. But before we get started, I just want to talk about Tread Labs. They're an innovative over-the-counter insole brand that's a great alternative to custom orthotics. These insoles come in four arch heights for a customized fit and can also be fitted with adjustable metatarsal pads. I consistently recommend them to my patients because I use them myself and so does my family. Tread Labs also recently launched a sandal line that has the same arch support technology as their orthotics built right into the footbed. Simply email hello@treadlabs.com and mention me to get your free samples. Welcome back, everyone. So last episode, we spoke about the different causes of or sources of metatarsalgia. So again, if you missed last week's episode, it would behoove you to listen to that one first so that there's a good flow from evaluation of these problems to the treatment part of it. Today, I want to focus on conservative treatment options for different causes of metatarsalgia, and you will see that there are many of these that are treated with a very similar approach. All right. So the first thing I want to start with is modalities. So is there a spot or a place for modalities? And the answer is yes. Now, I know there is a lot of controversy about utilizing modalities, and everybody gets up in arms about it, but I'm going to tell you that I have good success with using modalities, and I'm going to go through a few of them that I use when I'm treating metatarsal-related problems and how and why I use them. But if you're going to use a modality, you really want to maximize your treatment and think about what that your goal is, okay? What are you trying to achieve when you're using a modality? So I agree that modalities are oftentimes overutilized, and we don't get paid very well for utilizing modalities, but sometimes there is a place for them. So when you've tried everything else and you've hit a brick wall and surgery is, you know, the next option, well, give it a try, okay? So for example, what I like to do is if I find that a person has a very tight calf muscle, okay, the gastroc to be specific, and we'll be talking about how to stretch that later, but you know, we know that a tight calf can cause over 90% of foot and ankle problems and is a huge contributor to increased plantar pressure at the metatarsal heads, all right? So maybe you heat the calf with moist heat. It's very interesting. Sometimes I might just heat the calf, and I oftentimes will stretch while I'm doing that, but if I don't, and I have had people do this where they get heat and then I place them on a slant board and they say, I don't feel the leg that was heated as much. It's stretching so much easier. Okay. So I get that quite often. Sometimes while I am doing heat, maybe I'll do a little pain control. I might do some pre-modulated electrical stimulation through the metatarsal heads. You know, I'll put one pad on the plantar surface, one pad on the dorsal surface, stimulate them there while they're receiving some moist heat to the plantar surface of the foot along with the gastroc soleus complex. You know, if you want to consider maybe decreasing inflammation, let's say for like a Morton's neuroma or a capsulitis, which can involve both the plantar surface and the dorsal surface of the foot, and you want to do iontophoresis, let's say, with dexamethasone, you might want to consider, you know, the placement of the pad. Now, it's hard to do ionto in that area, but if you do it on the plantar surface of the foot, one thing you need to remember is that tissue is a lot thicker and much more calloused. And what is the likelihood of you driving medication through that callus tissue on the plantar surface of the foot. So if you have like a metatarsalgia between 3 and 4, maybe you place your met pad dorsally over the top of the foot between 3 and 4 to get that medication to drive in there a little more effectively. So what I want to do next is talk about this tight gastroc muscle. And this is something that I'm very passionate about. We know that the tighter the gastroc is, the more plantar pressure you have at the ball of the foot. So this increased pressure happens most oftentimes when you're in the terminal stance phase of gait. That's why I get a little frustrated watching people talk about stretching the ankle into dorsiflexion just to improve squatting ability. And yes, you need to do that to improve squatting ability. But a majority of the cases that I see with foot and ankle problems happen when they are in the terminal stance phase of gait, when they're very near full knee extension, where the gastroc is more involved, okay? So I find that stretching the gastroc is significantly more beneficial for forefoot pain than stretching with the knee bent and just stretching the soleus, okay? So this increased pressure at the plantar surface of the metatarsals is most increased in the terminal stance phase of gait. When that leg is behind you, your knee is extended, all right? So think about this. You have this tight calf. You have more forefoot pressure. As a result of having this pressure, you have more friction and more shearing at the plantar surface of the metatarsal heads. So with that being said, you may end up with a little bit more callus tissue under there, which thickens the tissue. And if you have a thickened tissue, no different than taping a nickel to the bottom of your foot, it now takes up space. You step on that, you feel increased pressure in there, okay? So that increased callus can be a problem. But the other problem that happens when you have such a tight calf is that your foot will start to splay more, all right? And you'll start to develop this collapse of your transverse metatarsal arch. So when you typically should put a little bit more pressure on the bottom of the first distal MTPJ and fifth distal MTPJ, what happens is over time, you start to lose that transverse metatarsal arch, and now you start to put more pressure on the second, third, and maybe fourth metatarsal heads, which are really not great at absorbing that kind of pressure, okay? So they start to get over-irritated, over-inflamed. And with that constant repetitive walking and pressure on that area, you get inflammation, you get tissue breakdown. And if those tissues aren't ready to hold up to that, can cause some pretty serious problems. And I see a lot of these. So if we want to increase calf flexibility and not irritate the metatarsal region, why are we having people hang off of steps with all the pressure focused on the metatarsals, okay, while dropping the heel off the edge? I just don't understand that. It does not make sense to me. I have seen so many people injure themselves or make their metatarsal symptoms so much worse by doing that. Think about it. All of your body weight on one leg, on the metatarsals, hanging off that step and just putting this sheer pressure and all of this pinpoint pressure right on that one area just inflames it, irritates it, and causes more trouble. So I never, ever have patients hang off a step unless they have zero metatarsal problems. And we have an athlete who can tolerate those types of pressures. And maybe we're doing some eccentric loading or something like that, or isometric loading. Those are the folks that I'll do that with. Otherwise, people are placed on slant boards in our clinic. All of my patients who receive orthotics are also given instructions on how to stretch with a slant board. So that's a 30-second stretch. Heels have to be down. The hands have to be on the wall so that your calves are not contracting while you're getting that stretch. A lot of people do this. They stand on a slant board, but they don't touch the wall, or they don't even put their head on the wall in front of them, so they're just hanging out there. Well, their calves are contracting to hold them from falling forward, and so they're not getting a great stretch out of that. So the pressure has to be down on the heels. They're not getting a lot of metatarsal pressure, and it's, you know, throughout the whole bottom of the foot. So it's very comfortable. I never have people with metatarsal problems have trouble stretching on a slant board. I don't find that the runner stretch is very effective, so slant boards it is. So 30 seconds on, 5 to 10 seconds off. I have them do that 5 times, okay? So basically breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and one time before you go to bed if you're that person who Charlie horses a lot at night, okay? Now, the next thing I sometimes will talk about with folks is that, you know, weight loss may not be a bad idea, okay? Every step you take is twice your body weight, and if you weigh 150 pounds and you take an average of 6,000 steps a day, which is 3,000 steps on each side, we're looking at 900,000 pounds of pressure, 450 tons in one day. That's if you only walk 6,000 steps and you weigh 150 pounds. So every pound you lose can help take pressure off of the foot. Okay, so I may have that talk with patients, especially if they've had this chronic metatarsal type discomfort. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is footwear. Now, we know that higher heels will drive the foot, especially the metatarsal area, forward and put more added weight on the forefoot, and so causing more irritation, more compression, more extension of the toes, therefore exposing the bottom of that foot. A narrow toe box shoe, you know, can give you some trouble because it just takes all those metatarsal heads and compresses them together and can give you some irritation. But on the other hand, a shoe that has too wide a toe box can also be a problem because you may have too much splaying of the foot. So you have to find what works, you know, that kind of that in between, something that's not too tight, causing a lot of redness on the fifth and the first metatarsal heads, you know, so that we know it's not too tight, but something that is not too loose. Because if it's too loose also, not only are they splaying, but they're going to shear more in the shoe and cause more irritation. A flimsy sole can cause, you know, all kinds of issues. So what I have the patient do is take that shoe of theirs, put a hand at the heel and another hand under the front of the shoe and try to fold it. And does it fold really easily or is it difficult to fold? Okay, kind of like a good, firm, rocker bottom type shoe. We definitely have trouble with, you know, your flimsy flip-flops or, you know, your low-quality shoes that just really have, they don't have much for a sole and there's really no stability there. These folks are going to have a much harder time. Now, sometimes we'll see people who don't have a lot of fat pad underneath the bottom of that foot. So you want to make sure there's enough thickness, that insole is shock absorbing enough, so it's not like they're just walking on a hard surface. So the other thing I want to talk about are orthotics. Now, metatarsal pain is definitely by far my favorite diagnosis to treat with orthotics. I will fit custom orthotics on lots of patients. I've been doing that for about 15 years. If I'm not using a custom orthotics, I'm using a Tread Labs insole because it has a removable and movable metatarsal pad. And that's one of the reasons I like to do that. It's all about the met pad and where it's placed. These inserts that you get off the shelf or you step on this platform and it tells you what category you should be thrown into doesn't always have that met pad in the right place. I actually did a custom orthotic recently that had a custom met pad put into it in between layers and was placed in the completely wrong position. And so the placement is very important. And we're going to talk about this here. The idea is to take the plantar pressure off the metatarsal head, that distal metatarsal head, where you get arthritis in the joint, capsulitis, inflammation of the flexor tendons. You might have a plantar tear or plantar plate tear, and that's all getting inflamed there. And so we want to take that pressure off. We want to not let those hit the floor so hard, okay? And there's many ways of doing this. So if your met pain is mostly 2 through 3 or maybe 3 and 4, I'll add a smaller teardrop type met pad. And what I do is I put that underneath the orthotic. So I have usually about 3 layers in the orthotic that this metatarsal pad has to come through before it gives that pressure in the foot. And what that does is it helps to distribute the pressure more evenly when it's under the orthotic than if you put it on top of the orthotic. People will say, it feels like a rock in my shoe or it's just too much pressure. They become non-compliant. They don't like the orthotics. They get rid of them. They don't use them and they still have problems, okay? Now, if there are multiple metatarsal heads that are involved, I'll use a 1 through 5 metatarsal pad. So this is a pad that kind of follows the shape of the metatarsal heads, the first through the fifth, I will taper it with a grinder so that it's a nice smooth edge to it, and it's not abrupt. And I will also taper each side, the medial and lateral side of it, so that the center is bigger under the second, third, fourth metatarsals, is a little higher, and the edges are lower. So if you imagine standing on that, that is going to help to reestablish that transverse metatarsal arch. And so when you put these met pads on, it's very, very important you put them in the right place. They need to be put just behind the distal metatarsal heads so that the metatarsal pad pressures on the shaft of the metatarsal and not on the joint, okay? And I do this demonstration with a lot of people, and if you haven't seen this one done, you should check out, I'll try to link the video where I have this patient who has claw toes, and they're extending quite a bit, and I just take my thumb and I put it on the metatarsal shaft just behind the metatarsal head. I put pressure there, and those toes straighten out of that hammer toe position or claw toe position and straighten right out. And so that can be a great benefit of using a metatarsal pad. Also, if you see these folks who are starting to extend quite hard at that metatarsal phalangeal joint. Sometimes I will build into the orthotic a little pressure relief area or maybe a softer region. If somebody comes in with something like a sesamoiditis, I may utilize a 1-5 metatarsal pad so they drop off the cliff, but I might also make that material underneath the sesamoids just a little bit softer so it's more shock absorbing just in case they do put a lot of metatarsal pressure on there. So as far as patient education goes, avoid those hard surfaces. Don't stand on a ladder on your tiptoes. Avoid those, you know, activities that cause a lot of excess plantar flexion. And, you know, those folks will do well. If they're bikers, you know, maybe if they're having metatarsal discomfort at the MTPJ, you might want to take the cleat of their shoe and then bring it back a little bit so it's more under the shaft and not under the metatarsal head as much. So there's a bunch of stuff here on metatarsalgia and the different causes of metatarsalgia. When all else fails and you've done all of this conservative treatment, and you may have other things that you like to do with the conservative treatment, and by all means, try all that. But if it doesn't get better, you need to remember that you could have other issues. You could have a plantar plate tear. You could have a sesamoid fracture. You could have a severe Morton's neuroma that just will not get better. It's just so large, it needs to be removed or injected. So sometimes injections can help. And then ultimately surgery to help correct some of these, these individual problems that cause metatarsalgia can be taken care of. So I know there was a lot there, folks. I hope you enjoyed this little two-part series on metatarsal pain. I thought there'd be so much there that we'd have to break this up into two episodes. And so if you didn't listen to the last one, please go back and do that. I hope you have a better feel for evaluation and treatment of metatarsal-related problems. If you're struggling with treating the foot or ankle, feel free to connect with me. My coaching link is in the show notes. If you'd ever like to host an orthopedic course, like a course on the foot and ankle, or maybe the knee, or maybe the shoulder, I might just be able to help you out with that. So send me an email, and we can certainly discuss how to do that. We do live courses every year in different locations, but we also do go to your location if that's something that works for you. So I hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. I hope you all have a great day. Be kind to each other and take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. For some more awesome content, go to orthoevalpal.com. Can't wait to see you there.